faith-filled finance. All major UK bank accounts. One app. Provision is built by Christians to help you steward what God's given you. Track your spending, saving, and giving in one place. Join the waitlist now at provision.money and get your first month free. That's provision.money.
The Leadership File on Premier.
Welcome to the show which helps you lead where God has placed you. I'm Andy Peck. I'm delighted to welcome Anne Danks to The Leadership File. Anne works with Christian Aid as Head of England West Side Region. We're planning to touch on a variety of themes, including leadership cross-culturally, the shifts in attitude towards women in leadership, and how understanding temperament can lead us to lead better. So welcome, Anne, to The Leadership File.
Hi, Andy.
So your journey to Christian Aid, first of all?
Yes. So I've had a variety of roles in the past, ranging from 10 years as a secondary school teacher teaching modern languages, through a career break to raise our daughter when she was young, then part of a team church leadership role for a further 10 years. I seem to do everything in chunks of 10 years. Then I had several years working at the Trussell Trust, which is the food bank charity that a lot of your listeners will be familiar with. And then I moved from there to Christian Aid. So I went basically from a sort of a UK-based charity role to being part of an international charity, looking at development and AIDS worldwide.
Great. And so, I mean, looking particularly at the transition from Trussell Trust to Christian Aid, what did you learn particularly from your time at the Trussell Trust?
I mean, the Trussell Trust is obviously a fantastic charity and has changed enormously, even in the time that I was there, because of the rise of the need for food banks across the UK. So that was a real accelerated time of growth when I was there, and the organisation had to move very quickly and include campaigning in its brief, and found itself in really key conversations at Westminster and the like, raised the profile of food poverty in the UK as a reality pretty much single-handedly at one point. It's now an accepted thing, but when I was first starting out, I was still convincing people that it was even a reality, that there were people in the UK that couldn't afford to eat. So it was such an exciting role to be a part of, and my personal role sort of grew from having responsibility for the West Midlands area through to the north of England, through to the whole of England, which was very exciting and gave me a sort of a real key oversight. I think when I moved to Christian Aid, when I did, which was just under a year ago, I wasn't really looking for a move because I was really excited about the role that I had. But I was invited via a sort of third-party organisation to have a look at the role. And the thing that really pulled me into at least considering the role was the breadth of experience Christian Aid have in fundraising. And I felt for me personally that would be a good career development, would be to really learn this, all the skills and the language and the thinking around fundraising. And also I was very interested in moving from a UK focus to an international focus with the much more complex issues involved. It felt like a really helpful personal development step for me, and a real challenge to take on at an interesting stage of life.
Well, good. I mean, good for you for keeping challenging yourself. That's that's impressive. And you know, obviously the fundraising element is, you know, ethical fundraising is particularly a challenge, particularly for many charities who sometimes use methods which get the right goal in terms of funds, but don't always tick all the right boxes along the way, which is a big challenge. So your role at Christian Aid, Anne, what's you have the West Side region?
That's right. The invented West Side region, yes, is a fictional region. It's just a shorthand way of describing the Northwest and the West Midlands.
Okay, yeah.
So the area I look after stretches from Worcestershire right up to the Scottish border.
Oh, wow.
But interestingly, the sort of head of England role is split across five individuals, and we share that between us. But we also have a multiplicity of roles which are cross-organisational. So we do a lot of project working, and I'm project sponsor for Christian Aid Week 2018, for the Greenbelt Festival relationship that we have. I'm joint sponsor for campaigns. So the role that I've taken off, very excitingly, is a real mix of local, regional work with churches and with our campaigning groups and so on, but actually also projects that are right across the organisation.
Right, right. So the kind of campaigns, you know, regarding the environment or regarding large companies paying tax appropriately, those are the kind of things you're involved in.
Those kind of things, yes, and climate change. Right. And our very important one this year is displacement. So people, refugees who are displaced internally, so they don't cross a country border and therefore have the protection of international legislation. They're displaced, they're refugees within their own country, and there is no legislation currently to protect them. So that's our big campaign for this year.
Right, right. So let's look at our focuses. This show and is on a number of topics pertaining to leadership, particularly this cross culture one. You had the opportunity to complete a master's in justice, advocacy, and reconciliation with a module on global leadership. I'm just wondering the kind of things you discovered within that.
Oh yes, it was fascinating, and I think the first task we had to do was to kind of think about our own understanding of leadership and possibly the key moments and the key influences that we'd had through our lives that had brought us to the understanding that we had. So we did quite a lot of self-reflection as part of it, which was really interesting. But then the reading and some of the assignments we had to do got us to think about actually we are a product not just of our personal experience but also of our culture. And within that, you might be a product also of an organisational culture. So if you're, let's say, you've been working for the civil service all your life, that you will not only have your personal experience and milestones, you'll have the UK culture, and then you'll also have the sort of culture of the civil service. And all of those add up to making you the person, the leader that you are today. And what we discovered through looking at the cultures in other countries was that some of the assumptions you make with a very UK-centric focus that leaders look like this just is not the case in other countries. So typically in the UK, and thinking about, you know, very often in the church, not universally now, thankfully, but certainly some of the church experience I've had over the years has been leadership looks male.
Yes.
Leadership is very charismatic.
Right.
Leadership is about making decisions and sort of helping people to implement those decisions. Now, that's obviously a caricature.
No, sure, but it's broadly true, yes.
But it's a trend that we have. Now, in other countries, so some of the Scandinavian countries, for example, but also other countries elsewhere, leadership is much more collaborative.
Right.
Is instinctively much more collaborative, and that is the type of leadership that is admired. And where we have clashes is where, you know, you people from very different cultural backgrounds come together and actually they would find this sort of Western self-promotional type leadership, the sort of I'm going to be the sort of the man of the hour and make the decisions and lead people and stand strong and be bold. They find it frankly embarrassing.
Right, yes.
Because that's, in their mind, that's not how leadership works. Leadership is about the common good and collaborating with others and understanding the views of others and having a really clear plan for how together we're going to get to where we need to get. again, of necessity because at the time that is a caricature, but I find it fascinating. And academics would call this a masculine and a feminine way of leading. That's just a terminology that's helpful to understand it. So what academics would deem as the masculine way of leading is about hierarchy and self-promotion and the sort of the charismatic leader, and the feminine way of leading is much more about collaboration. And I use these as I say, academic terms.
Sure,
I'm
sure.
Not,
yeah.
I'm not making assumptions about men and women, globally speaking.
That's fascinating. So, I mean, has that impacted your interactions particularly within Christian Aid?
Well, I think so, because what I think is really interesting is that actually generationally leadership is understood very differently. So if you look at the millennial generation, typically they don't revere authority in the way that perhaps my generation did.
Yes.
They don't look to sort of the older, sort of powerful generation and assume that they have all the wisdom to impart, and they're making the best decisions. Actually, they look at my generation and they think, well, you made quite a mess of things, didn't you? You've done a lot of harm to the planet.
Yes.
You've allowed institutions to hoard power. And they would want to see power shared very differently. I mean, as do I now, because obviously I've had a shift in my thinking. But just thinking about the generations, I think the millennial generation coming through now just see the world very differently, and they see and there's a profound distrust and cynicism around institutions. We look at some of the very difficult and very sad exposures of institutions, including Hollywood, Westminster, that we've had through the media recently, and you can understand why generally, you know, we are much more cynical about institutions, how they hoard power, how they use power, and are reluctant to let them have that position.
Well, you're listening to Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Anne Dax, who works with Christian Aid, and we'll be back just after this. Welcome back to the Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Anne Danks. Anne works with Christian Aid as the head of England West Side Region. She was talking before the break of her joining Christian Aid via the Trust or Trust and other areas of her career as well. She's tended to spend about 10 years at each kind of role. And we were talking particularly before the break of what she'd been learning about the cultural elements of leadership and how actually the UK's assumptions about what a leader is are not shared worldwide. And indeed, understanding that can be key to our interaction with others. And also we can learn from others' approaches to leadership. Kind of changing tack just slightly, Anne, and talking in terms of women in leadership, and when I talk with women in leadership, I'm awkward about addressing the issue because actually it should be a very normal thing. But actually, you know, the patriarchal focus of some church life tends to still pertain, maybe subtly, maybe overtly. I'm just wondering what your kind of experience has been as a woman who's been appointed to leadership roles, and your kind of take on the UK church and its kind of broader focus on this.
Yes, thank you. So it is fascinating, and I've gone probably on quite a complicated journey myself, because when you're in the church culture, it's quite hard to look objectively at why you are behaving the way that you are. All I can say is retrospectively, I'm just keenly aware that you talked about sort of overt attitudes to women and covert attitudes to women, or attitudes that we have that we're not even aware of. And these exist in both men and women. So looking back now, I can see that as a woman who is able to sort of synthesize, you know, complex information, make decisions, be quite forceful about, you know, understanding what the right thing to do is. I'm not saying I'm always right about things. I'm sure you will appreciate that.
Sure, sure.
But being in a position where that would be something I would consider a strength, it has not always been welcomed.
Right, yes.
And in fact has been seen as, you know, something, you know, unwelcome, something domineering, something not normal, not something that sort of would help the group culture. And I read a really fascinating book recently by Cordelia Fine, The Delusions of Gender, which I think is one of the best books I've read about why our culture has developed certain attitudes towards girls and women and towards boys and men. And it was completely fascinating because it's right from before birth. There are things we're not even aware of doing, things we are aware of but don't think matter, but actually small things add up to women being treated very differently. So I have a real thing, it's a personal peccadillo of mine that I really resent being called a lady.
Right.
For example, now people I don't always jump on it because people don't always mean anything by it. It's just a term. But in certain contexts, such as the work context, I will not let people refer to me as a lady or, you know, women in the room as ladies. I think, no, actually, we're colleagues. And if you call us ladies, there are connotations to that word, which are about protecting us, that we're not quite as robust as the men in the room are.
Sure.
That put us on, when I've challenged it, men will sometimes say, but actually it's promoting you, it's putting you on a bit of a pedestal. And I say, well, I don't want to be on that pedestal. I want to be an equal colleague with you, a partner in what we're doing. And I think, so sometimes the language we use has connotations that we're not aware of. And lots of people think I'm a bit over the top when I say this. So I'll never go, for instance, to a ladies' meeting. So lots of churches will hold something they call ladies' meetings. And I just on principle, I won't go. I will go to a women's meeting. I will go to a leaders' meeting because I love being with other women and I love being with other leaders. But I won't go to something called a ladies' meeting. And because of the connotations of that word, I feel just somebody has to make it clear that that's not an acceptable way to refer to women that you're partnering with either in the church or in a work context.
Sure, sure. Well, you're absolutely right that the language that we use does have, because of the connotations, the assumptions made, does create a culture, creates an atmosphere sometimes that really, you know, is not something we want to support. So good on you for taking a stand for taking a stand where you need to. Do you think that it's easier to be a woman in leadership within a charity setting than maybe in a local church?
I think at certain levels, definitely, because, you know, there are HR, there are employment, there's employment legislation that ensures that technically men and women in employment are treated equally. I think beyond that, there are cultural norms in some Christian charities where the tendency will be to prefer men in leadership positions. I would say of Christian Aid, that is not my experience, which is fantastic for me to be able to tell you that actually men and women are treated very equally. And part of that is because we've spent a lot of time researching and doing work on gender justice globally.
Right.
So we are very sensitive to the language that we use and the way that we view people, male and female, and have multiple projects across the world where we're promoting, particularly, you know, women that have need help with producing livelihoods to support the family and the community, and where women's rights need to be improved. So we're very intentional as a charity, and that's a fantastic experience. And I do think it has really impacted the culture. So one of the things I noted very early on, that I was really encouraged in the meetings, any meetings that I'm part of, to speak my mind and to help make decisions and move situations along.
Right.
And that has been a very empowering experience
That's great. Great to hear. Great to hear, Anne. So looking at our final topic that we were going to chat about, and this is one fascinating to me, and that is how understanding temperament preferences have given a window into your own leadership and to how others function. And you found particularly the Myers-Briggs temperament preference indicator, to use the correct language, has been used. Maybe you'd like to give us a little thought on that.
Anyone who knows me knows that I talk about this all the time whenever I get the chance, and I love to work people out. I love to work out what their personality profile is. So it is a topic I talk about a lot, and I've read around it a lot. I find it completely fascinating. It can be misused, so I have found myself in situations where people will say things like, "Oh, well, so and so is an introvert, therefore they will not do such and such," and I will jump on that and say, "Actually, no, you're making you're making a leap too far there. You can say that somebody, you know, is introverted, and they behave in such and such a way, but you can't put people into boxes." And so I'm aware that I'm, you know, I've got a particular set of letters that will describe my personality, but then I meet somebody else with those same four letters, and I'm completely different to them, with completely different expression of that personality type. So it's very important not to put people into boxes. Having said that, when you do have the opportunity to understand better your own personality type and how you interact with others of a different personality type, it's very empowering, because you can start to modify, dial down certain tendencies. So I'm technically an ENTJ, which is an extrovert with a thinking preference, intuitive, and I like routine and order.
Yes.
So, and I'm quite comfortable with all of those. It's a relatively rare personality type for a woman to have, and which probably explains a lot about me. But it helps me to know that I can be just a bit too much for certain people, and actually I need to find a way of dialing down my very kind of strongly enthusiastic, strongly sort of sure that I'm right about something, just to dial that down a bit and make sure that I'm listening properly to other people, bringing them on board, helping them to understand why I think the way I think. So they have a chance to critique that, perhaps push back on some of my assumptions. So I've found that incredibly empowering, but also really helpful in interactions with other people.
Yeah. No, that's really useful. I first became aware of Myers-Briggs when a housemate had a former girlfriend who was a temperament preference indicator practitioner, and she said to him, "Look, you're an extrovert. You're going to blow people away unless you understand a bit more about your temperament." You know, he was ENFP, as it happens. And so, I appreciate listeners who are unfamiliar with Myers-Briggs terminology may be thinking, "Hang on, what you're talking about?" But basically, it's the extrovert or introvert, which is where you get your energy from. N and S is your intuition or sensing, whether you intuitively receive your information or whether you use the senses. The T and F is thinking and feeling, whether you make decisions based upon logic or upon values. And then the P and J is how you like to live your life, whether you're more structured J or more spontaneous P. Would that be a good summary?
Yes, I think so. And what I think is really interesting is where the clashes arise with people, because sometimes it's just one letter different. So I know with my husband, and we've had lots of conversations about this, we differ through our N and S.
Right,
so
right.
He likes data. He likes to get lots of information before he makes a decision, which, you know, can't knock that.
Sure, sure.
I, as an intuitive, as an N, my instinct is to sort of pick up lots of data sort of vaguely as I have conversations about something, and then I develop a bit of an instinct.
Yes.
Now, we very often end up with the same decision at the end of it, but just through a different process.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He will always push back to me and say, "Why do you think that?"
Yeah, yeah.
And I usually say, okay, let me work out why I think that. And I have to sort of go backwards and put the detail in. And that's a really good pushback. Because actually you can't just go around making decisions without justifying them to others. Even if they end up being, you know, the right decisions, it is important to sort of look at the areas where you're less skilled and work at them, because that's about functioning as a team, you know, with other people, and understanding that data to substantiate decisions is actually really important.
Well, fantastic. And sadly, time has defeated us, but it would have been lovely to explore that further. But I think it's good to raise this issue, and certainly you can find, I probably shouldn't say this, but there are opportunities online to discover your Myers-Briggs preference. But I would urge listeners to meet with a proper practitioner who can take you through the ins and outs of this, because as a lot of these things, a little knowledge can be a dangerous thing. So, but it's a tool that many Christians have found of enormous value. So, Anne, it's been terrific to chat, and thank you for the broad range in which we've been chatting. But we've really appreciated your insights and thoughts on this range of topics. So, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So you'll be listening to The Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I was joined this week by Anne Danks. Anne works for Christian Aid. She's the head of England West Side Region. And you can find out, obviously, more about Christian Aid by going to Christian Aid's website, which is christianaid.org.
Yes, christian-aid.org.
There we are. Wonderful. So I look forward to your company again next Sunday at 3:30. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to The Leadership File on Premier. Andy Peck serves as a tutor at CWR, a Christian charity whose courses and publications aim to apply God's word to everyday life. Contact him via email apeck@cwr.org.uk.